Namo myoho renge kyo. Hi friends, how are you doing? I hope this finds you in good health and secure. All of that. Thanks for being here. And mostly for your practice. It's amazing. So very grateful for your efforts. I'm going to start another series in the midst of this. I know I'm doing Lotus Sutra videos, and I have many to do yet because I have a couple of other books that I'm going to read the translations of. So we're going to be very Lotus Sutra focused for a while yet. But I'm going to intersperse some entries from the new book, the Buddhism Reference Volume 2. And so these will be short, relatively short. And we'll just go term by term like I did for the volume one, for the first volume of Buddhism Reference. And because this is volume two, these terms won't be as commonly used in our modern practice, but they are commonly read in our study material. So might as well, from our perspective, from Nichiren's point of view, our modern practice of Lotus Sutra Buddhism, what do these terms, what implications do they have to our practice? All right? I'm not going to try to define these terms. Like the first one here is arhat. So do I need to explain what an arhat is for people who still practice Hinayana or Theravada? Or just earlier teachings, Agama, so on and so forth? No, that's not my goal. I will talk about those things so we can look at them from the perspective of modern Lotus Sutra Buddhists practicing as bodhisattvas. Yeah? So I'm not going to stay away from the original meaning of these words, but because many of these translations, like I'm finding in this BDK translation of the Lotus Sutra, they insist on continuing to use these words, which are not really relevant to our Mahayana Bodhisattva practice. So if they're going to appear, let's understand why they appear, why they are not quite a good fit, because they're older teachings, but they're not, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? Let's just know our history a little bit. So volume two is going to cross that line a lot more than the first volume did. Make sense? Okay, so arhat or arahant. In Sanskrit, it's one who is worthy. Is that vague enough for you? Pali, arahant. In early or Hinayana Buddhism, a perfected person, one who has gained insight into the true nature of existence and has achieved nirvana or spiritual enlightenment. We're going to find out as we go on through here that's not the case. That's what the arahants think. That's what early Buddhists practicing earlier teachings thought they were aiming for, but they really weren't getting there. They weren't what they had achieved, although meritorious, right? Meritorious, I should say, had not achieved perfect, complete enlightenment. But they didn't know that. So the word was used to indicate somebody who'd achieved something they really had not. They didn't, they didn't know that. The arhat, having freed himself from the bonds of desire, will not be reborn. And that's an interesting statement, because consider for a moment religions, all religions, so focused on the body, right? Still, with all the spirituality and the magic and the mysticism of religions, and I don't care we're talking about Hindus or we're talking about Muslims or Christians or Jews or Kabbalists, right? Everything is self-centered. And you could say, well, so is Buddhism, Sifu. Well, yeah, the rhetoric of the body is in all practices because we are samsaric beings and every experience is viewed in terms of me, 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 me. Right? Even in Christianity, God made us in his image. Why not in her image? Why not in its image? It's always this externalization of self. And this is where Buddhism diverges. Remember Nietzsche? Remember that guy? Never seek this Gohonzon outside your flesh and blood body. Yeah, that's the body. But the enlightenment, the spiritual awakening, it ain't outside of us. There's no reason to externalize, right? All the enlightenment is right here. Gohonzon mind. There's no other religion, if you want to call Buddhism a religion. I resist that label because religion in its definition, in all of its rhetoric, prayer, faith, all of it, is about externalizing our potential and making it magical, mystical, like somehow from outside of us will come this release. And even worse, much worse, is the idea that that can't happen until we're dead. Oh, man. There's no con man or con woman on the planet that wouldn't see the intense beauty of that. You never have to prove anything. How can you disprove, for instance, anything that you say will happen after you're done? You're gone. You're extinct. You're dead. You're going to come back. You're going to climb out of your grave and come back and go, ha, caught you. Buddhism is right now. It's about how to live this life, right? So, an arahat will not be reborn. That goes against everything we've studied, cycle of birth and death. Birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. What, you go birth, death, birth, death, birth, whoops. Birth, death, the cycle of birth, death in Buddhism is about this life. Everything in Buddhism is about this life. So talk about a misunderstanding. I'll never be reborn. What are you talking about? See, this key misunderstanding, but it's not because Buddhism was wrong in the early teachings. It's because that was the mindset of the people at the time. They couldn't conceive that their enlightenment could happen right now. They just couldn't. That was the state of the capacity of the people at that time. That's why the teachings were the way they were. We live in a different time where we can conceive of enlightenment right now. Right? That's the Mahayana. The state of an arhat is considered in the Theravada tradition to be the proper goal of Buddhists. Four stages of attainment are described in Pali texts, and you know Buddhism was translated into many languages, even in its earliest transcription days. The discoveries a couple of decades ago in Gandhara region of northeast India prove that out. One, the state of a stream enterer, a convert achieved by overcoming false belief and doubts regarding the Buddha, the teaching, Dharma, which that's incorrect, right? We know the Dharma isn't the teaching. It's the teaching of the Dharma is about the experience Dharma. So again, by the way, I might edit. This is the rough draft of this book. So bear with me as I work through honing this in so it can be more clear, yeah? And the order, the Sangha. The once returner, who will be reborn only once in this realm, a state attained by diminishing lust, hatred, and illusion. See this obsession with a human lifetime? It's ingrained in the people of those early teachings. They're not getting it yet. And to their merit, I suppose, I don't know that Buddha was really hammering it home, but he was putting them in situations and with stories and, you know, the sutras, leading them to get this insight, because you can't force some Buddha into somebody else. You have to lead them so that they make their own insights, their own renge, yes? So what we're witnessing in these transcriptions and traditions is the reticence of people to, or reticence, maybe not the right word, they just weren't ready. But don't you be misled by these as though they're factual, because they're only factual as a historic evolution of the capacity for self-enlightenment, yeah? The non-returner, who after death will be reborn in a higher heaven, that's religion right there, where he will become an arhat, a state attained by overcoming sensuous desire and ill will, in addition to the attainments of the first two stages, and the arhat, except under extraordinary circumstances, a man or woman can become an arhat only while a monk or nun. A lot of problems in all of that, but this is from the earlier practices, right? All these early conceptions were suited to the pale understanding of the traditions and minds of the Indian culture of the day, with layers upon layers of worlds like flat earths stacked over one another, representing levels of spiritual development. One can see a direct correlation to the social construct of the caste system to indicate social values and restrictions. Due to this insistence on the physical realms as destination perceived as abiding for physical or spiritual, the idea of a lingering self or soul continues to exist in the arhat even after the dissolution of the physical body. Terms like once-returner and non-returner are evidence of this reincarnation-based mythology of multiple lifetimes, a leftover from Hinduism's various religions and mythologies. This results in an incomplete understanding of nirvana. In fact, the very fundamental teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, the continuance of life after death, plagues the early students of Buddhism all the way to the perfection of wisdom and even into the provisional teachings of the Lotus Sutra. In the 8th chapter of the Lotus Sutra, Shakyamuni tells the arhats in attendance that the nirvana, quote-unquote, they believe they have attained is in fact not nirvana. He says so right in the Lotus Sutra. So it's not just my opinion, right? He further explains that the true nirvana, that is complete and perfect, can only be attained using the law of Myoho Renge Kyo, the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. As Buddhist teaching developed greater capacity in its students, these worlds or layers became levels of mental insights rather than physical places, and would eventually become realized as moment-to-moment realms of influence and experience in the mind. 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, right? Mahayana Buddhists criticized the arhat ideal on the grounds that the bodhisattva is a higher goal of perfection and completeness, for the bodhisattva vows to become a Buddha in order to work for the good of others. This divergence of opinion continues to be one of the fundamental differences between the Theravada and Mahayana traditions. A bodhisattva is a person who generated effortless bodhicitta, the wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Since effortless bodhicitta is the entry gate to the Mahayana path, he entered the Mahayana small path of accumulation. When he cultivates wisdom, it is conjoined with emptiness, and that makes his mind vast, due to bodhicitta, and profound, due to realizing emptiness. He wishes not to abide in individual liberation, abiding nirvana, but to be free from the extreme of peace, abiding nirvana, as well as from samsara. Therefore, he wishes to achieve non-abiding nirvana. Nirvana of no remainder, remember from volume 1? Which is the attainment of Buddha. In the Hanuman section, the later chapters of the Lotus Sutra, Nichiren points out repeatedly Shakyamuni's explicit exposition on the Buddha as the objective and only goal of Buddhist practice, not arhat, without regard to lifetime. There is no birth. There is no death. There is only sentience while in this physical moment. Therefore, these moments of human sentience are our precious and unique opportunity to experience enlightenment, Buddha. Make sense? So, there's some little bit of history. There's some dissection of arhat and what it was thought to mean. And then for our practice, because that's the purpose of this book, how to properly view the limitations of this language. And so that when we read it as Mahayana Lotus Sutra Buddhists, we understand from where it comes from, why it's stubbornly left into many translations by translators who are still enamored of the early teachings as though they were the only true teachings, right? It's arhat is a non-Mahayana term, and yet it appears throughout. So just so you understand, why is it there? Bias. What does it truly mean? It certainly describes some early achievements. It's like when you get a good report card from your elementary school, but it doesn't get you a high school diploma or an advanced degree, right? There are limitations, and that's just life. So that is the first video, and this one was kind of a complex term, so probably longer than I wanted it to be. The next one will be Bhagavat, because we're reading that a lot. And we'll get into that in the next one. So thanks for being here. If you have any questions or suggestions, put it in the comments. Again, this is a first draft, so I may go back in and tweak some things. But this volume 2 should be certainly handy for advanced study, right? For digging into terms. But even just reading the Lotus Sutra, depending on the translation you're using, we're going to run into these words. We might as well understand their history, their use, their meaning, and their value to our modern practice. So with that, be kind, take care of your health, stick around, savor your practice, your Lotus Sutra Buddhist practice. With Nichiren's insights, it's so amazing and easy to do. All we need to do is be confident. Have confidence in your practice. Keep it strong. All right? See you in the next one. Bye for now.